All right, let's get the show rolling if we can. Welcome to the Maryland Libertarian Party Convention. My name is Bob Johnston. For those of you I may not have met, I am the state chair. I have been the state chair for 7 years now. It seems like yesterday that we got started. Another fabulous, fun, packed day, if I may say so myself. I'm always grateful to the people who come out into our group, who give up their time and their information for really just for expenses or very little money. We've been very fortunate with that throughout the years. We're going to have a busy day. Michael will be speaking in a minute. Wes Benedict will be on at 2:30. Arvin Bora will be speaking at 3:30. We'll have our central committee meeting around 4:30, dinner after that, and then Sharon Harris will be the banquet speaker around 7 or so. A lot to accomplish during the central committee meeting. We will be electing officers to the executive board, nominating delegates to the national convention, nominating candidates for the November election, some possible changes to the state party program, and also a constitutional amendment that's been proposed for, too. So we have a lot to do today. Kim is our hostess, as always. She is. Please take care of her. Tip well. Squires is a nice restaurant. I had all 8 of the conventions I hosted here, and they treated me very well, and I'm very grateful for that. It's very easy to deal with. If you have any comments or questions, please let me know, and I'll do my best to accommodate you. Does anybody have any questions before we begin? Hearing none, let us get started. We will be beginning with Michael Cloud, longtime activist in the Libertarian Party from Tucson, Arizona. Michael is the author of the book Secrets of Libertarian Persuasion, Unlocking More Secrets of Libertarian Persuasion, and is soon to be published, A Marketplace, Not a Battlefield. Michael helped get Harry Brown's 96 presidential campaign off the ground and was Harry's fundraiser and events planner in his both 96 and 2000 presidential races. He was involved with the Project Archimedes in the late 90s with a handful of others, which helped triple membership from 10,000 in the Libertarian Party to 34,000. At the 2000 National Party Convention, he was given the Thomas Paine Award for Excellence in Libertarian Communication. With his political partner, Kyle LaHow, in 2002 and 2008, they got the ballot initiative on in Massachusetts to eliminate the state income tax. The first time, they got 45%. This is in a state bluer than Maryland. The second time, they got over 900,000 votes and forced the teachers' union to pony up $7 million to stop it. 2 years later, 2010, they got another ballot initiative on in Massachusetts to cut the state sales tax. Another 900,000 votes, another $4.5 million cost up by the teachers' union to keep the precious tax. He's an at-large member of the LNC, and he's here today to tell us about the impossibility trap, what is impeding the Libertarian Party from progress and growth, and how to overcome it. Please welcome Michael Cloud.
I want to break a few of the rules of most speakers. Most of them stand behind lecterns. I think that's to sort of block the tornadoes being thrown, to stop the assassin's bullets, or mainly because it's our blanket, like the line does.
I'm alone, but I'm here.
And I'm going to come back here, so fear not. But I'll be walking about a little bit.
So I belong to the peripatetic school of talking. Stand-up philosophy is what we call it.
I wanted to share with you something that I've noticed. I see things that people don't do, and I hear things they don't say but should have. And one of the things I began noticing about 6 years ago is why people were not voting Libertarian, why they weren't giving money to your campaign for office, why they weren't putting their yard sign out, why they say, I don't want to waste my vote. Has anybody ever heard that? I don't want to waste my vote. Good, don't vote for Romney. He's a real waste. Now, I noticed a phenomenon, but a lot of us have done articles against the don't waste your vote argument. Has anybody ever written against it and made their case why it's not a waste? Most of us have. We've tried to do it. And I've talked to people who believe they're wasting their vote, and do you know what their reaction to our articles is? You haven't convinced me. Oh, I know, that requires 2 active neurons. Now, you can't say that. That would be rude, and I would never say that, except behind their back. Now, I don't want to waste my vote. A lot of us heard that about Gary Johnson. We heard it about Mr. Sarvis. We heard it about other libertarians running for office. But we heard other comments somewhat like that. You can't win. Look, you have every right to run for office, but
Get real, man. You can't win. How many have had somebody tell them that? Or said that about our candidates? People will never vote for you. There's not enough drunkenness in all of Maryland to get people to vote for you. It's not possible. It'll never happen because if you actually change the law, the courts would strike it down. Or the legislature would reverse it. You can't win, you libertarians. It's impossible. And I've realized that these aren't separate arguments. These are not separate objections. They're part of a fundamental concept. You're having a conversation with someone. I'm having a conversation with someone who believes that what we're proposing can't happen. Not won't happen, can't happen. People will never go for it. People could never go for it. There's no chance it will ever happen. That's why they didn't cast more votes for Gary Johnson. That's why Mr. Sarvis didn't get more votes when he ran, is because they believed that we're deluded. Well, I know in your heart you're a libertarian. I know you're good people, but get real. Why are you running? You can't win. It's impossible. Their belief. You're having a conversation about how to do something they believe to be impossible. If I told you I have a plan for making square circles, I need investors. Is anybody here interested? Because it's impossible. Now, if they really believe it's impossible, they're impervious to every single argument because there's that filter in front of them. I'd like to help your campaign, but you can't win. It's impossible. I'd like to do it, but you can't possibly get elected. It's impossible. We've heard it again and again and again. And you know the bad news? They convinced us that it's impossible. Do you know how I know that? I know that because we have candidates. When asked, why are you running for office? We'll start with, I know I can't win, but. That's not a good thing to say. I know the woman won't go out on a date with me, but I'm going to ask her out anyway. Don't waste her time. Don't waste your time. If it's really impossible, then no conversation is possible. No convincing is possible. Nothing you say is going to make a difference. Does that make sense? If they really believe it's impossible, it's going to flow over them like water off a duck's back. Does that make sense to you? I contend we don't have to convince them anymore about the wasted vote. It's a wrong conversation. It's not changing their mind. We don't have to change them about you can't win. It's a wrong conversation. We have to have the possibility conversation about what is possible. And I'm going to come back to that in a second. There's two elements of impossibility that we're dealing with. When they believe it's impossible for a libertarian to get elected, it's not just their beliefs that are affected, it's their behavior. They won't put up your yard sign if they think you can't get elected. They won't put your bumper sticker on their car. What if a deranged postal worker goes postal and shoots my car? It could happen. The fact is, we're up against an impossible conversation until we break through the impossibility barrier. Two elements. There's the belief that it's impossible, and then there's the behavior that reflects the belief and reinforces it. If you really believe it's impossible for you to get 10% of the vote, how much are you going to campaign?
Oh, I wouldn't.
You wouldn't campaign. If you really believe it's impossible to run a $1 million campaign for U.S. Senate in your state, would you even try? If you believe it's impossible to lose that excess weight you put on, like many of us have, are you even going to try the diet? No, you can't win. So the behavior reinforces the belief. They believe it's impossible for us to win, so what do? They don't vote for us. Well, I didn't like Romney, and I didn't like Obama. But what are you going to do? One of them is going to be president. That's not called a choice. That's called a dilemma. That's called a tragedy. As long as they believe that, they won't help us with campaigns, they won't vote for us, they won't even have us on their talk radio shows. How many of you have tried to get on talk radio shows on mainstream talk radio, not on the internet, Have any of you been turned down because you're not a real candidate? You're not going to win. A little later, I'm going to tell you a story about Chris Matthews that I hope you'll have fun. Harry Brown couldn't believe I had the nerve to do it. But that's my job. I'm a crash test dummy for Liberty. Let's talk about the impossibility of beliefs and behavior. They believe it's impossible for us to win, so they don't take us seriously. So they don't even entertain voting for us. So they don't read our materials. So they won't put up a yard sign. So they won't host a coffee at their home. So they won't come to a libertarian event because those people are like flat earth people or people with the propellers on their head or the tinfoil to keep the Martians. Because what they're trying to do is impossible. That's literally what's going on in their mind. Do you know how I learned this? I asked them. Oh, I know, that's a shock. I know when you want to find out something, you should talk to everybody except the person who has the answer. So I would ask people, I'd say, if you liked a libertarian and you thought he was really a good candidate, do you believe it's possible for him to win? And I didn't get 99 out of 100 no's. I got 100 out of 100. And if some of them could have voted twice, they would have. I believe the market is telling us something. And it's not telling us don't run. It's telling us the barrier we need to get through. And by the way, for those of you who are getting depressed, I have a solution. I actually have three that you can start using the moment you go out of the room after the talk's over. Don't leave the room, by the way, after the talk's over. But just when you go home for the weekend, if you never see me again, you can use this tool because it's that powerful. Now, you wonder, well, how does this guy know it's powerful? Because I go test it on people in Walmart, in Target, in bars. To needless markup, or Neiman Marcus, take your choice. I've tested this on real people, and they've kind of gone, well, tell me more. Would you like to get that response instead of you can't win? Tell me more. Would you like to have the opportunity to change their behavior toward libertarians? To at least considering us. To at least reading our literature and seeing whether we're offering them something better than they're getting today. Because their beliefs and their behavior reinforce each other. They'll make sure they never hear us out, they never read our stuff. If anybody asks, libertarians. This is usually, you get it from Republicans. How many heard this from Republicans? God, you guys are spinning your wheels. You're wasting your time. If you learn how to vote for corrupt bastards like Romney, you could win. And I said, and what do you win when you get on? You win Romney. That's not a win. I was in Massachusetts when he was governor. That's called a mess. Beliefs and behavior would affect it, but it affects us too. If every person you talk to, if you're selling widgets and going door to door, and you go, hi, I'm selling widgets, and the first person goes, drop dead, you weasel, don't ever come back, boom. And the second door, they reject you. And the third door, reject you. And everyone you talk to tells you you're nuts and they don't want to buy your widget. How are you going to feel about knocking on the next door? You're going to get skittish. You're going to get rejection phobic, aren't you? It's human nature. If everybody that you talk to about your widget says no, and by the way, you're ugly and you dress funny too, you're not going to want to talk to that next person. And that affects all of our candidates. Has anybody here as a candidate ever been badly treated in the sense of insulted, humiliated, or they attempted to do it to either an individual or a talk show? Raise your hand if that's ever happened. I found it's happened to person after person. And remind me to come back to my Chris Matthews story because it has to do with helping Chris grow spiritually. Now, their beliefs and behavior are we can't win, so they tune us out, they pay no attention, they discount us. But that affects us. We believe that it's impossible for our own candidates to do better than they do. That's the reason we get 2 and 3%. Oh, he's going to get 2 or 3%. Why work on the campaign? Because maybe campaigning in 4 or 5 neighborhoods with a few volunteers can get it up to 4%. And maybe starting with 4%, next time we can talk to another 2,000 or 3,000 people door to door. There's a lot of places in New Hampshire. Do you know how many votes it takes to get elected to the state legislature? Anybody here know? Depending on your district, somewhere between 800 and 1,400 votes. And you're in the state legislature. That's like a small town council race, right? It's a door-to-door shoe leather kind of thing. It's totally doable there. Now, here's what happens. We start believing them because they told us it's impossible. We can't win. And so we don't want to talk to the next guy about it because he's going to reject us too. She's going to reject us too. And so what do? We flinch. We back off. We don't call the radio station to get our candidate invited. We don't make the case for having a libertarian on the show, as I did with Chris Matthews. But I'll come back to that because we helped him grow spiritually. He's a better man since I've talked with him. And his producer is no longer his producer. Now, it affects your beliefs and your behavior as a candidate. It affects the people we talk to.
If this is really true, if there is an impossibility trap, and if they really believe that this is so, what behavior does that engender in us as libertarians?
There's a concept for us called learned helplessness. I don't know how many of you have ever read your psychological literature, but if you put people in a situation where no matter what they do, they can't improve things, if they're being electrocuted, tortured, beaten, or as I call it, election season. If you're being treated that way and you can't do anything to ease the pain, at some point you quit. You give up on it. You go, I just give up. I shuffle down. I quit. I surrender. I give it up. I consent to it. I don't want to do this anymore. Let it go. We learned that we can't make a difference as candidates. And so what do we not do? You're a candidate for office. How many volunteers do you have on your campaign?
Probably 6 right now.
How would you like to have 250?
Great.
That was how many Carla. That was how many Carla Howell had when she ran for U.S. Senate against Ted Kennedy in a state about the same size as Maryland. What holds people back from volunteering to your campaign? Sometimes you forgot to ask them. Sometimes you forgot to have some form to do. That happens. But a lot of times we're simply not asking them. Oh, they wouldn't want to work on it. We had psychiatrists who would come and lick envelopes and send messages out at the end of their workday. We'd say, you know, we have more mentally challenging work. I spent all day talking to crazy people. Let me lick envelopes. We believe it's impossible. We learn to give up, to quit, to be helpless, to not try as hard as we could. Now, the phenomena that we're engaging in here creates something called a self-fulfilling prophecy. Because we don't try, our vote totals stay low. Because they stay low, say, what's the point in trying? Is everybody getting this? Does that make sense? Our behavior reinforces our results. Our results reinforce our behavior. And as a result, we're caught in the impossibility trap. Now you say, how does that have to do with a wasted vote? If you knew the libertarian candidate could do better, or that your vote for a libertarian could result in your taxes being cut 50%, how many of the people might vote for you if that could really happen? Lots of them. How do I know? Because I lived in Massachusetts. And I got 885,000 votes with Carla Howell to end our state income tax. Couldn't get a single libertarian magazine to cover us. Not a one. Of course, the day after we did well, they used the collective pronoun we. Look what we did in Massachusetts. I didn't see we's check. I didn't see we's coverage.
What do you mean, we white men? Remember the old Tonto story?
Okay. Now, here's the bottom line about the impossibility trap. The more we believe it, and the more we reinforce it, the more they buy into it. You're just a peripheral party. You're perennial candidates. You always run the same guy for governor. You run the same guy for senator, city council, whatever. There's no point in voting for libertarians. You're not serious. Ever hear that? We have done that to ourselves, and we've let them do it. We've done it to ourselves by believing the impossibility trap and not getting one extra volunteer. Because one extra volunteer on a Sunday afternoon can knock on 200 doors of registered voters and hand a leaflet, the world's smallest political quiz, or vote for Jones or Smith or whoever, Sarvis, who is running for office, and here are the benefits if he's elected. Oh, I didn't know that. These people aren't rejecting us. They haven't heard us. Now, I contend that that's the big problem we have. And I contend that that's the foundation of every single objection. How do I know? Because I tested getting people past the impossibility barrier to where they believed it might be possible. And then I noticed something. They started asking what we'd do. What's your candidate's stand on this? What is he proposing? That's not a conversation with somebody who thinks you're nuts. That's a conversation with someone who's considering maybe it's worth this one time. Like, remember Governor Johnson, be libertarian this one time. Vote libertarian this one time. If you get enough people to do that, they're willing to do it a second time. Now, here's the problems that we run into here with the impossibility trap. Again and again and again and again. We reinforce them, they reinforce us, and we become a fledgling little party marginal. We're like the Flat Earth Society. We're like the people who speak Esperanto. You know there's a language there, but it's not a growing community, okay? Is there a way of getting past that without having some logical argument? Excuse me, you obviously haven't read Rothbard's Man, Economy, and State and Power and Market. And had you read that book, I would know you're a jerk like I am. And you have no life, like I don't. And you spend your time talking about the non-aggression axiom. I'd hit you if I were allowed. But today we're going to talk about liberty. The truth of the matter is we can get past this impossibility trap. It's not a matter of having a long discussion. It's a matter of acknowledging that it's there. It's the elephant in the room. The drunk in the family, the person who's doing something that no one wants to talk about. Whenever someone says, I don't want to waste my vote, I translate it. Sounds to me like you think it's impossible for the libertarian to get elected. That's what I said! Watch, they always say, that's what I said. Sounds to me like you're saying it's impossible for him to win. Or at least pretty much impossible. Well, yeah, that's exactly what I believe. Good. Now I help him to move to a position we can talk about it. Whenever they acknowledge that the issue is they don't believe it's possible, libertarians can't win, it's a waste of my vote, you can't be serious, there's no chance, why are you guys still doing it? You're marginal, you're not serious, you're not part of the real discussion. Real discussion focuses on how to divide the loot up, not whether or not looting should occur. Okay, that's the Republican and Democrat argument. What do we do to get them past that? Yes, I agree. It's impossible. That's the reason I think it's a wasted vote. First thing I do is agree with them. Agree with them? Yes, Grasshopper, you must learn the way of judo, the way of acting without acting. If I say to you, if you make a statement to me, say, you guys can't win, it's impossible.
You guys can't win, it's impossible.
You know, you might be right. You're probably right. It probably is impossible. But if it were possible, if it could happen, would you want it? I'd write that down. First thing, you acknowledge them, because if you don't acknowledge them, you're not listening to them. You're discounting who they are. They made a point, acknowledge they're probably right. Guess what I just acknowledged if I acknowledge they're probably right? They might be wrong! That's right. I open the door to not certainty, not you're absolutely positively can't, no chance of error, 100% true, no chance. Sounds to me like you believe it's impossible. You're probably right. First thing I do is acknowledge them and recognize them. Now the issue isn't who's right and who's wrong. But if it were possible, then I pause for a minute, but if it were possible, if it could happen, would you want it? And do you know what most people do? And by most people, I mean 87% of the people I've tested in Walmart, in Target, in public schools, yes, public schools, at the post office with our postal workers. No, none of them with postal on me. They with FedEx on me. And here's what they said. Yeah, I wouldn't want that. You might be right. Maybe it's not possible that our candidate for governor could get elected. But if it were possible, is that the kind of proposal you'd want to see? Is that the kind of policies that you want as a family member, as a breadwinner? For example, he would be cutting taxes here and here. That'd be an extra $2,600 a year for you and your family. Is that something you'd want or not want? And it's called the magic if. It's very simple. It's in my first book. You acknowledge they're probably right. When you take a breath, you don't immediately jump into it. You're probably right. There's probably almost no chance. Notice, almost no chance. Probably it's a longer shot than the idea, I don't know, that the Cleveland Browns win the NFL title. I don't know who your loathed football teams or basketball teams are, pick them. You're probably right. It's probably a ridiculously long shot. There's probably almost, notice, almost no chance. And then he paused. Now they're feeling smug. He says, I'm right. He likes me. He thinks I'm smart. Actually, I do. I wouldn't be having a conversation if I didn't respect the person. I don't want to have conversations with people who can't think. Do you? What good is it? The fact is, they have a reason for believing what they believe. Maybe it's a bad reason, but it's a reason. And they have thought about it. Maybe they thought wrongly, but they thought about it. And I'm going to show them the respect I would want if I were in their shoes. Maybe you're right. Maybe it could never happen. But if it were possible, would you want it? And almost always, 80, well, tell me more. Sometimes they'll say, tell me more. Would you want it? Well, what's he offering about the candidate? Well, what's Starbucks offering to do? Well, he's offering to do this and this and this. And this would save your family this amount of dollars. This would cut our state government spending and help us reduce waste. Is that something you'd like to do, reduce government waste and cut your taxes? Well, yeah. Why? As soon as they acknowledge that they like anything you say, if it were possible, would you want it? As soon as they say yeah, say, okay, why? What is it about it that really appeals to you? And let them talk. Because the reasons they come up with and their understanding is far more powerful than whatever I know. They don't need to read Atlas Shrugged. If they need to read Atlas Shrugged, we'll loan them a copy. If they need to read Power and Market or Human Action, we'll get them a copy. But in most cases, all they need to do is think it through, because a lot of this is sophisticated common sense. A lot of what libertarians say is sophisticated, the way people live their private lives every single day. They don't beat people up. They don't rob people on their way to work. They don't do that. Well, some neighborhoods, yeah, but not likely in most neighborhoods. Now you say, how does that work? It works on something called the suspension of disbelief by Coleridge, you might remember. A willing suspension, getting them to suspend or set aside a belief they have, a belief that it's impossible. Very often you can say, you know, a lot of people believe it's impossible. But what if it could happen? And by the way, what if or if it were possible, would you want it? What if it could happen? Would you want it? Would it be a good thing? Well, there's no way people would vote for it. You're probably right. Blah, blah, blah. I accept it. But if it could happen, and people did change their mind over time, as we've changed our mind on same-sex marriage, on marijuana, same as wine and beer, as we've changed our minds on the war, as we've changed our minds on a number of things, racial equality with African-Americans as well as whites, women with the right to vote, people have changed their minds before. And I bet it seemed like a long shot for them, too. If that could happen here, would it be a good thing or a bad thing? What do you think? Now you're in a conversation, and you're in possibility land. That's the conversation that enables them to hear your arguments, to hear your evidence, to consider it. And here's what happens when you say, oh, that's interesting. Could you tell me a little more? The more they elaborate on their reasons, the stronger their reasons get. It's called cognitive dissonance. For those of you who want to go read the footnotes, 1956, Leon Festinger. Sorry, I'm a geek. I admit it. But the truth of the matter is that the reasons they come up with are going to be more compelling and real to them than anything you and I could do. You say, okay, well, the magic gift, that's one thing. Does everybody see how it works? Sharon, give me an example of, I want to give you the impossibility trap, and I want you to respond the way I would, with a magic gift. Sharon, there's no way that Jimmy Harris could possibly get elected as governor.
You know, you might be right.
Okay.
But let me just ask you, if it were possible, would you like that?
Well, like what? Now, notice I'm just getting in a conversation with her, right?
Well, would you like the fact that he's going to end the state income tax?
Well, yeah. We pay too much.
Would you like that he is going to make sure that you have can choose where your child goes to school?
Oh, that'd be good. I'd like that. Now, here's interesting. We didn't rehearse this. I'm going to pick different people during this because I want you to realize this is simple. Simple doesn't mean easy. Why? Because we all have to get out of our habits. Libertarians I'll tell you something David Friedman said years ago. He says, there may be two libertarians who agree. I am not one of them. I used to define our fellow libertarians. Libertarians are people who cannot take yes for an answer. You know, I think your candidate's good. Hold on a minute. Hold on a minute. You haven't told me where you stand on the non-aggression axiom. I'm not sure I'm going to let you vote for my candidate unless you give me the right answers. Are you ready? This is the lightning round. We're so used to having arguments about our ideas, we forget that we need to have conversations. Arguments get people's defenses up. Conversations let us talk and reason with one another. And maybe we won't agree, but we have an opportunity and the possibility of agreeing.
Would you want that?
Oh, yes, I would want that. And if it were possible, if it could happen, if they did change their mind, would you want it? Or would it be good? And then, shut up, that's the hard part for libertarians. I'll tell you why you'd want it. No, don't tell him why you want it. Let him answer. Now, there's a second way of doing it. That's called the magic gift. And you can find that in my first book, Secrets of Libertarian Persuasion. That's a 3-page chapter that I use all the time. There's a second way of doing it. It's called push the button. I learned this from Leonard Reed many years ago with Foundation for Economic Education. When I was 20 years old, trying to figure out liberty, I wrote to this guy who was the president of Foundation for Economic Education, and he very generously wrote me back and sent me all kinds of stuff. He was a real mensch. He's a good man. And the truth of the matter was, he sent me one that blew my mind. And I put a section in my Secrets of Libertarian Persuasion where I give him credit, and it's called the push the button. Now, let's take the same thing. It's impossible. Tell me it's impossible. There's no way the libertarian's going to get elected.
There's no way a libertarian's going to get elected.
Well, you're probably right. I mean, the odds are really against it. I mean, we agree on that. But if it were possible, if it could happen, now that's the way I would have gone with a magic if. Now let's change it. You're probably right, it might happen. But if there were a button in front of you, and pushing that button made it possible, would you push the button?
Why would you? Don't have to quiz
me. I love these candidates. Right. They're so easy. Larry, lay down.
Matter checks?
Sure.
Okay. Well, it's not going to happen, because human nature just isn't geared that way. These are the two choices, and we've got to go with one or the other.
You're probably right. For a lot of people, that's reality. Those are the only choices that really seem to matter. And it's got to seem impossible for anything but that, doesn't it? Seems probably ridiculous to even talk about it. Does that make sense? You may well be right, and you probably are right, but people...
Well, I'm not going to waste my vote this time around.
Excuse me. You don't have a speaking part unless you're called on. You don't have to talk. Now, here's the reality. By the way, libertarians are far tougher on us than civilians. I've had people go, I'll show you how to screw up your idea. How about this? What if I use a cattle prod on you and I make you unconscious? Now, let's see your answer. Okay. There are, in fact, people like that, and I'll tell you how I deal with people like that when they get really aggressive. I go, listen, I really appreciate your feedback, and I want to thank you. You've given me a lot to think about. I'll see you. And then I go look for a fresh one, because he's not a customer. He's not a prospect. Nothing wrong with him. Well, there are, but I don't want to bring it up. No, but the truth is, there are some people that no matter what you say, I told you this works 87% of the time. I did not say 100%, did I? And again, that's my findings in Arizona. Now, maybe people are different here. Maybe they've got 49 chromosomes. I don't know. But the second question I asked, maybe you're right, maybe it is impossible, maybe it could never happen. But if there were a button in front of you, and that button made it possible for same-sex marriage in Maryland, would you push the button? If there were a button in front of you and pushing it would make marijuana the same as wine and beer, same regulations, same liberties, would you push the button? Would it be a good thing or a bad thing? Oh, I don't know. Well, talk to me about it. Now we're in a conversation, not an argument. He doesn't have a closed mind. He's talking to me about it. And almost all cases, when people start engaging in a conversation, They're hearing you out. They're not trying to pick sides unless we get aggressive with them. So that's why if there were a button in front of you and pushing the button could enable anybody who wants to get out of Social Security tomorrow to leave and set up their own private, would you push the button? My answer is I would blister my finger pushing the button and call for more buttons for my friends. Wouldn't you? If there were a button in front of you and you could end marijuana illegality and reclassify it, same as wine and beer, would you push the button? If you could push a button and make Sarvis governor, or your candidate for, again, what is your, it's Quinn. Mr. Quinn, I'm sorry, it's the mighty Quinn. I go to states, and sometimes my mind goes, I don't remember. And I'm in front of people, and I'm going, I'm going to be embarrassed, and my brain goes, don't care, ask. Mr. Quinn, if it were possible for Mr. Quinn to be elected governor, and it was up to you and you alone, would you choose him? Now, let me tell you an area in which we actually did this. The year is 1982. The place is Alaska. The candidate is Dick Randolph. He's been elected as a state legislator twice as a libertarian. Got elected twice. He's running for governor. And the polls show him at 12% of the vote at the time. I want you to realize this is 82, 12% statewide race in a three-way race. Somebody up there, and I don't know who got the idea, I don't know whether it was Dick Randolph or one of his people, said, you know, a lot of people don't think you can win, and so they're choosing among the other two. And so they rewrote the poll question, and they called back. If each of the three candidates had an equal chance to win, and were up to you and you alone, who would you select to be governor? And Randolph's numbers went up to 28%. So, by the way, let me put that in there. If each candidate for governor had an equal chance, if our libertarian candidate, the mighty Quinn, had an equal chance to a Republican and a Democrat, and we're up to you and you alone, would you want him to be governor? Well, I don't know. What's he stand for? Now we're having a conversation. Now we're out of impossibility land. We're in the conversation, possibility, choice, and take our life in our own hands. That seems simple, doesn't it? And you're going to forget this if you don't write it down. The magic if, the push the button, and if they all had an equal chance, I said I'd give you three, there's three. If you found out, if there were a poll that showed people really want another choice, they're not happy with the other people, they're voting as a lesser of two evils, and I don't want them, but I don't like anybody else. If they all had an equal chance, who would you want to be governor? Who would be best for your children, the blah, 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 the blah, blah, blah. And what they will do is that's when they step outside of impossibility. Now, why do I want to have this conversation with them? Because this is the conversation that opens them up to putting up your yard sign. This is the conversation that opens them up to reading your literature. I used to stop door by door when we were campaigning with the Brown campaign, the first one. And I say, you know, we only have a limited number of these flyers, and I know you're real busy, but I don't have enough to give out if people aren't going to read them. Could you promise me you would read it? Harry says, you can't do that. You just met the people, and you're asking them to promise to read the flyer? I said, yeah. He said, what'd they say? And I said, well, about one out of three said, okay, I promise to read it. Please leave it with me. Have you ever thought of doing something that insanely crazy?
Mm-hmm.
This is the reason I'm a white lab rat. Now, we've looked at all three of those, and all three of them bust them out of impossibility. What happens then? That's the time to have a 15, 20-minute conversation with them about the benefits to them if you're elected. How it matters to their family. And don't talk, well, if you're elected a libertarian, it means that you validated the non-aggression of force principle. And you know what that means? No. It means you'll be a better person for knowing that fact while you're being screwed by the rest of the government. Oh, well. Now that you put it that way, how could I resist voting for the libertarian? But if you tell them that if this libertarian gets elected, and this libertarian is able to get some of these policies through, it's going to cut your family's taxes. It's going to end the regulation on your small business. It's going to allow you to homeschool your child without interference from the public school system or authority or dominion of them. It's going to give you opportunities to make choices about your values and your family's future. Once they do that, you'd be surprised how many of them will agree after this, after you go through the impossibility track. A friend of mine gave me this. He said it was really good, and I read it, and I went, wow, this is really good. And I don't have a lot of them. If I gave it to you, would you read it? If I gave it to you, would you read it?
Now, that's pretty nervy.
Which is what politics is. And it could be a campaign flyer. It could be, we got this really cool thing. It's the world's smallest political quiz. Do you have a minute? It's really cool. All the kids are doing it. Oh, I want to be like the kids. Yeah, yeah, that's good. You ask them for permission. You ask them to agree to do something, and they will do it. Now, here's what's interesting. That's the point saying, by the way, I don't want you to feel pressure. And I always tell people, I don't want to feel pressure just before I put pressure on them. And it helps them grow. Anyway, I don't want you to feel pressure, but if you'd like to, we're having a little campaign meeting, and our candidate's going to say a few words. Maybe you have some questions you'd like to ask him personally. Have you ever had a chance to ask questions of a governor candidate personally? Most of them have never met a candidate for public office or never a higher office, so it's a big deal. And what happens once they have the conversation? They're done with impossibility.
They've just broken the barrier. It's like shattering the sound barrier. Once you're through it, you're through it.
And once you've gotten on the other side, now it's a matter of showing them the blessings and benefits that liberty has on their families, the better life that they'll have from having liberty, the libertarian solutions that Carla Howell and Arvin are talking about on Facebook and at the website, to show them how their life would be far, far better with less government burden on their shoulders and more liberty in their hands. You do this, and you find people stop giving you the argument of the lesser of two evils. They stop giving you that you can't win. They stop telling you that it won't make a difference. They stop believing that it's impossible. Here's what happens to the libertarians once we start believing it. Instead of talking to 20 people going door to door on a Sunday, we talk to 200, which, by the way, you can talk to 200 homes in most communities. Of the registered voters, you could do that in a four-hour period on a Sunday afternoon. If you go out with your libertarian friends and each do 200, if you had 10 of you, that would be 2,000 people exposed positively to libertarian ideas who have never, ever met a libertarian in their life. You're the first libertarian they met. You're real, and you've opened a door for them they never considered. Now, is it a guarantee they're going to vote libertarian? Absolutely not. We don't need a guarantee. Let me ask you the question I always ask. Pretend we're playing poker. Okay? I get dealt a hand. I'm the libertarian, and it's a libertarian hand. And there's the big government statist over here. There's the conservative here. And there's the progressive liberal, Hillary Clinton, there. Okay? And their hand is their political positions and the value it has. If I put my cards down, face up, where people could look at it, how many think I got a winning hand with libertarian proposals? How many think the libertarian solutions are the best possible for America? How many think families and friends and schools and communities and churches could have better ways of life, and businesses could do business more easily and serve their customers more easily and their employees and build bigger, better businesses more easily? How many think unemployment might be knocked to the ground if we got rid of the government regulations that caused friction and burdens on the free market system and created more and more and more? All of this is possible by getting past the impossibility barrier. Does that seem like very simple to you? Because I'd like you to try it on a couple of people that you have not vaccinated. These are not people you regularly argue with. Somebody at the office, yeah, Margie, was just, I heard this weird guy over the weekend, and he said something interesting. And tell him, you know, a lot of people think that there's no way a libertarian candidate could get elected. Probably the chances are far higher that I'd win a lottery. Do you believe that? Yeah. Now, I just got him to say impossibility. Then I go through my process. You might be right. But if it were possible, do you think libertarians would be better elected officials, better bureaucrats, better politicians, better office holders? It'd be better for our state, better for our country, better for our community. Oh, that's how you get to test this stuff out. And I told you that I was going to have a mention of Chris Matthews, didn't I? And I don't want to cheat you. I'm no tease. If I'm going to tease you, I'm going to please you. The year was 1996. We had dial-up on the internet. Are you with me? Oh my God, I almost got the whole website. Bang! Oh, it collapsed. Dial it again. Chris Matthews would not have Harry Brown on his show. And I thought to myself, self, Chris needs a chance to grow spiritually. Could I help the man? Can I hear an amen, brother and sister? So I called up and I got a hold of his producer. The producer is the guy who does the booking with most of these shows. And the guy says, yeah, I know who Harry Brown is. I keep getting your bleepity-bleep news releases. And I said, funny you call him that. That's the same thing we call him. Right? And the guy says, why the F, and I don't mean friendship, why the F should I have Harry Brown on Chris Matthews' show? And I said, because you want a pay raise. How am I going to get a pay raise by having Harry Brown on the show? I'm glad you asked me that question, sir. I read your Arbitron ratings, or your Nielsen's. According to Nielsen's, your viewership's 180,000 viewers, right? Yeah. And your ad revenue is based on the number of people that watch your show. Yeah. Now, you and Chris think Harry Brown is totally wrong and that he's nuts on what he's proposing, even though he's a nice, civil, thoughtful guy. Yeah, that's fair. I said, now you've just told me you think Harry's going to get somewhere between 500,000 votes and 1,000,000 votes, right? What would happen to your ad revenue if your viewership every Friday went up from 180 to 680,000 viewers? Would your ad revenue go up or down? Well, it'd go up. I said, do you think if Harry Brown was coming on and he and Chris Matthews were arguing point counterpoint for just 5 minutes on an issue of the day, and Chris presented the solid labor, liberal, Democrat view, and Harry Brown presented the libertarian view, you got to know we tell all of our supporters to watch it. Yeah, that's 180,000 plus, 500,000 more. Now, you have 680,000 viewers. What would your ad revenue go up like that? And he says, I'm not sure. And I said, well, I happen to know that. And he says, how do you know it? I said, because there are two shows on CNN with 700,000 viewers, about the same amount. And their ad revenue is charging four times what you're getting. Four times what you're getting would be an extra staffer for you, maybe a nice ride to and from work, a pay increase, and maybe you could pay Chris a little bit more money so he could stop wearing those goofy suits that he wears from time to time. I said, to me, it's just marketplace. If you're the only guy with Harry Brown on, they're all going to watch. This is why I don't get why these guys didn't have Ron Paul on again and again. They knew his people would be watching. And the guy says, I'm not sure I get your argument. And I said, I told you, if you get more viewers and more people are watching Chris Matthews, and you think Chris Matthews would clean Harry Brown's clock, your ad revenue goes up, your viewership goes up, and more people are hearing Chris Matthews. Some of them might want to come back and watch him on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, in addition to Friday when Harry Brown comes in. Oh. I said, so I don't want you to invite Harry Brown because it does me a favor. I don't want you to do it for the children. I want you to do it because you deserve a pay raise, and I'm showing you how to get one. And I hear this silence, and I said, any chance that you want to try this? Try it for 3 weeks. If it doesn't work, you can go, I'm a blowhard. I'm nothing but hot air. But if it does work, wouldn't you be the new genius at MSNBC? I admit that's a low bar, but that's for people who don't watch the Fish Channel. But I want you to realize something, is that libertarians have to find creative ways of arguing for our candidates to get on. And higher viewership is a way. And the Ron Paul people started doing this in 2012. Do you know how I know it? Because their fundraiser is a reader of my books. And because their fundraiser and I had a conversation. And he says, oh man, that was really cool. I said, why don't you guys do it? Ron Paul supporters, would they'd be blogging it everywhere. Every Ron Paul website would be saying, Ron's going to be on such and such. Be sure and tune him in. And he goes, this is really good. And that was when Ron Paul became very popular on Comedy Central. We did it with Jon Stewart. We did it with, who follows Jon Stewart? What's his name?
Stephen Colbert.
Oh, terrific shows. But the truth is that we were able to get that because we went through the impossibility barrier.
I want to leave you with an idea. And that's the idea that we don't have to win to win.
We don't have to win today. We don't have to get 100% of the vote to win. All we have to do is make progress. If every one of our candidates does a little more than our previous candidate did, campaigns to a few more homes, raises a few more dollars, gets a few more volunteers, asks a few more people, has a few more libertarian conversations, gets on a few more libertarian talk shows, whether it's on the internet or on talk radio. Every step forward that we take lowers that impossibility barrier for the people who haven't heard us. And the people that have heard us, you say, well, Gary Johnson got 1.3 million votes in 2012. What would happen if he ran again and got 4 million? Do you think they would see a trend? I assure you that they would see a trend because they've got to fill pages. They've got to fill pages. They've got to talk about stuff. How much attention did Sarvis get because Sarvis's numbers were going up? We got lots of it, didn't we? Got all kinds of it because he was seen as being relevant and important, because it was possible for him to have an impact. And if people see us growing, we can say maybe we can't win this time, but every additional vote we get increases the chance that we can win. Is that something you want us to do eventually, to win? Vote for us today and we can win tomorrow. Impossibility is music for the deaf. It's sights for the blind. We have to get people out of there. We have to open the door so that they can see the benefits, the blessings, the wondrous possible things. Not a perfect world, but a lot better with liberty. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the way out of the impossibility trap. Thank you. I will answer questions, but I...